We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time. Well, I did not, this
let's
time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
That's definitely.
This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster shit.
And this week is
Night Trap.
Night Trap.
They're right behind you, Night Trap. 10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha la 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 la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God. It's
just... We're going in.
We're going in raw.
Wait, what?
Wait.
Oh, hey, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Hi. Scott.
And I'm Steven.
And he's kind of creepy.
A little bit.
After his name, we have to really get it in faster. No, he's Steven, and he's kind of creepy. Super fast. Got to get that in there. And we are Soul of a Gamer podcast. Every week we play a game, or every other week, or whatever the fuck we're doing now. We tell you about that game, or we tell you about our hot takes about things, and you listen, and you like it or hate it. I don't know which, but I'll leave that up to you guys.
But either way, as long as you're watching... We're here for you.
Yeah.
So, whether you like us or hate us.
We hope you enjoyed our hot takes last week. I don't quite remember what we did for hot takes, but we hope you enjoyed it. This week we are doing
Portal 2. I almost forgot.
This is actually one of my favorite games that came out in that era.
Yes. Actually, I surprisingly hadn't beaten it before. I didn't realize I'd never beaten Portal 2.
Oh, I love the ending. The ending to this game is fucking hilarious.
So this is my first time actually finishing the game.
Yeah, it's a cool game, though. It's much better, in my opinion, than Portal 1. And that's really controversial because people really liked Portal 1.
I mean, I love Portal 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get into that in a couple minutes. For now, we're going to talk about what the fuck have we been playing.
Yes.
Steven! The fuck have you been playing?
Well, the fuck I've been playing this week has been Lies of P Overture, the new DLC that just came out.
Dude, why aren't you playing Lies of P? Stop fucking playing stupid games.
Yeah, but it's the DLC came out, dude. It goes back in time.
Who
a
just
prequel
told someone,
to what
someone
happened.
Else told me that they were playing that too. Was it Clay?
Yeah, it was our buddy Clay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. He's replaying the game before he goes into the
DLC. Yeah, because I was confused. So the way they were describing this to me, guys, is like you couldn't play it after you beat the game. And they were just being really confusing. And I think you can play it after you beat the game.
Yes.
But for some reason they said...
It's 70% into the story.
Yeah, it's 70% into the story. But when you say that, it almost sounds like you, at that moment, if you don't choose to play the DLC, you can't play it anymore.
No, you can, but so when you start a new game
that
plus,
with,
or you go into a new game,
yeah,
it you don't get to just go to that spot anymore. You have to make it to that spot.
I don't actually agree with. I think they should maybe have that be an open thing. So like Dragon Age, the way they do it is they put totems. Yeah. Like you can go to the DLC at any point in the game. And most people choose a very specific point when you're a little higher level and you have a better chance of beating the DLC. But you can go whenever you want and it's always available, which I find a much better thing for DLC. I think that's kind of what we want as people is that option for the DLC to be able to go in whenever we want.
Yeah, I agree. Especially like if you had just started a new game plus, because I had the same thing happen to me when Elden Ring came out, because Elden Ring did the same thing. The DLC starts 70% into the game.
And now you're like, I
started a new game plus. Yeah. I had just started a new game plus without knowing the DLC was coming out.
Yeah.
And then I heard about the DLC and I was like, well, shit, I have to grind 80 hours of gameplay to get to where
and
I was.
Not that it's bad. You still love playing, but it would be nice to like jump right into the DLC.
Oh, yeah, it would be. And honestly, in games like that, especially with Lies of P, like these stargazers, the way you portal into the realm, and these stargazers are in every level in every world. And like the main hotel, you can teleport in between them all. So I'm like, why don't you just have the DLC start at the main hotel? Like that way you could start from as soon as you get to the hotel. Cause that's honestly like only like a half hour into the game. Maybe like you just like some tutorial stuff and then you're at the hotel. And
do you
then...
have to do tutorial stuff on a new game plus?
No, you can skip it on some of them on some games. Some games do make you do it, but a lot of them are optional. But a lot of the tutorials in these like Souls likes are like, just either part of the world. They're not really tutorials. It's like, here's a little thing. Here's attack. Okay, here's how to attack. Okay, but that's all you get. Like, here's the button for attack.
Here's the button. Here's the button for defense.
Dodge. Yeah. No, that's your tutorial. Have fun. Dialogue.
Okay. So how have you been liking the DLC? Is it good?
So one of the things that really sucks, this game was released and the director of the game made it seem like he didn't pay attention to the fact that most people would be playing this on a new game plus.
Yeah.
So the difficulty is spiked beyond belief for anyone playing on a new game plus.
Really?
It is really broken. And they actually created two lower difficulty settings for the DLC when it came out.
That's
and the
funny.
Only way most people can play the DLC, if you are playing it on a new game plus, myself included, is to put on the lowest difficulty. It is astronomically brutal. The smallest of enemies were giving me the hardest of times. I was not making it through if I got surrounded more than two enemies. Like, it was like, this doesn't feel like the game at all. You put it on the easiest difficulty and all of a sudden it feels like it normally should. So he did come out and say he's going to do some balancing in a next update.
Nice.
For that purpose, but I'm like, dude, how would you not think we're gonna play it on New Game Plus? This was the game we all talked about loving much.
Dark Souls didn't. They anticipated people playing a New Game Plus.
Yes, exactly. Well, Elden Ring, the whole level scaling of the DLC has nothing to do with the leveling of the real world, so it didn't matter what level you got.
That's normal for DLCs, or they'll scale to your current level.
Yes, exactly.
So, but for some reason, devs sometimes don't think it's very rarely that they don't think about it, and it's usually the bad devs. I'm surprised they did it for Liza P.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of shocking to hear him kind of like say that a little bit, and I don't have any direct quotes or anything, so if I am wrong on the information that I saw, forgive me, but that's all the information I saw about it and my personal gripe with it. But besides that, honestly, the DLC has been fantastic so far. The new weapons are amazing. They added these like Wolverine claws and a bow and arrow. That's what I'm running with now. And oh my god, I feel more like Wolverine than any Wolverine game I've ever played. Like, it is so cool to be Pinocchio Wolverine. I'm like, this is fucking wild.
Besides movie tie-in games, I don't think there's any specific Wolverine games.
Well, yeah, I know. There's
a bunch of X-Men games for sure.
There's one coming out. Insomniac, I think, is making a Wolverine game.
Oh, interesting. I think I'm over X-Men.
What does the good they did with Spider-Man? I'm interested to see what they do.
Well, like, they used to have, what was that old game for the Xbox 360 back in the day? It was so fucking good.
Wolverine Origins?
No, it was, shut up.
That's a lot of people like that one.
No, it's the one, it's like over the top. You're over the top, like
Marvel
second
Alliance?
Person point of, yes, I think it was. Marvel Alliance
or
1
X-Men
and 2.
Legends?
One of the, something like that. And it was a really cool game.
Yeah.
You could play as multiple X-Men and have fun, or multiple Brotherhood players and have fun. Like, it was a cool little...
Yeah, X-Men.
That
Legends
was a cool
yeah.
X-Men game, and it's hard to compete with that one in my book now.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
well,
what are you
I have
playing?
Been playing DK64. Donkey Kong.
Interesting.
And I got to heard, I listened to the entire rap, and I realized how way long it is. He's the leader of the bunch. You know him well. He's finally back to kick some tail. His coconut guns can fire in spurts. If he shoots ya, it's gonna hurt. It's just
a
funny
god,
rap.
That rap sounds like one of those raps that Childish Gambino in one of the stand-ups was making fun of. He's like,
yeah.
I went to the hat store today and I got myself a hat.
Yeah. It's like old 80s, early 80s rap, you know? It's like...
Oh, yeah.
Not as... I mean, Apache wasn't too bad, I guess, in the 80s
with Apache,
when it comes to rap. But, like, this is, like, the... Yeah, what's that one? Basketball is my favorite sport.
I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
You know, it's like, it's a really bad rap when you hear, like, Biggie rapping.
Oh, yeah. The actual rappers.
But the game itself is actually a lot of fun. I keep forgetting how good this game is. And I just,
I
wanted to emulate it.
64. I haven't played it yet.
My biggest thing is the clunkiness, but any fucking N64 game, you're going to get a lot of clunkiness from it. And like, there's sliding, of course, when you jump on something, for some reason, your feet slide slightly and it could fuck you up because you're normally used to like planting and moving forward a little bit. So you make it. But in these games, you more than make it and then you move forward and you fall off whatever you're trying to jump on.
Okay.
And the camera angles, of course, blow. But again, this is just, it's N64. It's the way they did their fucking every, it's not the game maker's fault. It's the system fault.
That's fair.
Yeah. If they were to remake that game today, it would be a fun fucking game to make.
Okay.
No, I've been enjoying it though. It's a fun old game. If you've never played it, give it a shot.
Yeah, we'll do. All right.
You want to jump right into this?
Let's do it. Portal 2, let us have it. What is the game about?
Here is your story about how the game was made. When people talk about Portal, they often describe it as lightning in a bottle.
Ow!
Mm-hmm. A short, clever puzzle game with a dry sense of humor, a minimalist design, and one of the most memorable AI villains in video game history. Released in 2007 as part of the Orange Box, which I always thought Portal was its own game. But apparently, they actually released it in the compilation, the Orange Box. And I don't know if you ever had the Orange Box, but it had like five games.
I have it, actually.
Yeah, I believe
it had
actually, like...
Jin had it. I didn't have it, actually.
I think it's like Half-Life is in there.
Portal
was an original that they put in there, and there was another original they put in there.
Prey?
I can't remember. Whatever it was, they put all these games in there, and it's really cool, but I had no idea that Portal, I thought it was just like a compilation of all the games they already made, but Portal was in a new addition to it, which was kind of a cool thing. I mean, it is only like a couple hours long, so it makes sense that it's not a full game, but...
Well, even on the actual release of it, it was only a $10 game, I think.
Yeah. As part of the Orange Box, Portal was never meant to be a blockbuster. It was a bonus, an experiment, a tight 2 to 3 hour experience that didn't overstay its welcome. In fact, when the game first came out, reviews repeatedly said it was the perfect length and didn't need a sequel. What most players didn't know at the time was that Portal had an unlikely origin story. It wasn't born in Valve's boardroom. It started as a student project, and this is hard to say, Narbacular Drop. Developed by a small team of students at DigiPen Institute of Technology. Their project caught Valve's attention, and the company made a bold move. They hired the entire team straight out of school. Isn't that amazing? You would not get that today.
An entire team straight out of school? That's crazy.
Well, it's like 7 or 8 people. But you know, like,
the
entire department will not get hired out of a classroom. No fucking way. From there, those students became part of Valve's development crew and began building what would become the original Portal. That game, incredibly, was developed by just 7 or 8 people.
Crazy.
It was tight. It was smart. It was done. And that should have been the end of the story. But the success of Portal changed things. After Valve released the Orange Box, the company took a kind of creative deep breath. Instead of immediately jumping into sequels or larger projects, they split their teams into small creative groups, encouraging experimentation, which, again, you will not fucking get today whatsoever.
I love when people encourage people to just do as crazy and as bonkers as it is. Like, we said that with the Split Fiction, It Takes Two people. They really encourage creativity as well.
Yeah. And you just can tell that, like, most companies don't. That's the big thing. That's why it's so unique, because most companies are fucking assholes. They're like, no, get everyone working on this project right now. We gotta go.
And I keep finding that a lot of these smaller development teams have the most creative ideas because they have not as many cooks in the kitchen.
And not just that, they're also asking for input. You know, there is a creative director, but he's not like, my word is law.
Well, also, I heard something today, actually, on a video. I'll have to try to remember and post a link to it later. But this video was talking about how a lot of AA games actually go a little bit more crazy with their ideas and throw a lot more stuff at the walls because they don't have as much writing on it, because they don't have as much of a budget. It's a lot easier to throw a main crazy idea out there for...
They have a strict budget, but they're not as worried about like losing $400 million.
Exactly. When you're only spending $5 million on the game instead of $500 million and then $600 million on marketing or whatever the fuck ridiculous numbers are coming out today. Like, it's ridiculous to see, like, you can't take as many like chances in a big studio because of how much money is involved, but these little studios can. So that's why we get these crazy ideas.
Which is cool. I like that a lot.
That's awesome.
Out of one of these groups came in an idea for a follow-up to Portal. Not a sequel at first, but a spin-off, something fresh. And this is where things get wild. The early prototypes for Portal 2 weren't even Portal anymore. There were no Portals, no GLaDOS, no Chell. The developers wanted to try something completely different. The new story was set during a robotic uprising sometime in the 1980s. The Aperture facility was run down and chaotic, overrun with malfunctioning bots. The environments were dynamic, walls shifting, transforming, and falling apart. The main villain? Cave Johnson. The eccentric, shouty CEO of Aperture Science. His role was to bark absurd science raps from the past through pre-recorded messages. Following him was a character named Beatus, who would show up and provide legal justifications for whatever nonsense Cave had just said.
Oh, no.
That would have been a funny game, though.
That would be kind of fun.
Having him and like a little robot say, well, according to the 1968 statute for robotic intelligence law, only.
There are a lot of audio logs of Cave Johnson in the game probably were some of these things.
Yeah, some of them. But then like Beatus was kind of removed altogether from the game.
True.
It
was funny. It was weird and just didn't work. After 3 months of development, Valve had a rough prototype. They brought it to playtesters and the reaction was lukewarm at best. The game didn't feel like Portal. Players were confused. They missed the Portal mechanic. The emotional arc wasn't landing. So the team made a brave decision. They threw most of it away. And they started over. How many times have we heard this, man?
Just so many times. But I'm like, also, like, if you have something that everyone loves, why get rid of all of the basis of it? Like,
yeah. Well, this wasn't going to be a sequel. Remember, it was going to be a spinoff with a different science-y mechanic. Like, and I can see that. I can see them doing like a spinoff. Even now, I'd be like, okay, maybe a spinoff without the portals would be cool and do something weirder from the Aperture Science Department because they did have a bunch of programs going on.
That's true. But also, a lot of their like games are kind of same universe-y, so they're all kind of spin-off-y.
It would be a different department of Aperture, I feel like. It wouldn't be the same.
I feel like this is almost a spin-off of Half-Life because the companies are named. Yeah.
Well, Aperture was in Half-Life, you were playing as a Black Mesa person, and then Aperture was their direct competition, but they are all in the same universe.
Yeah.
They brought back Chell, the silent protagonist from the first game. They resurrected GLaDOS, the AI antagonist who's supposedly been destroyed, and they brought back portals. Because as much as the developers had wanted to try something new, they realized what made Portal special was the connection between its mechanics and its narrative. This time around, though, the team was much larger, about 40 to 50 developers, and they had the time and resources to push things much further than before. They revived old ideas that had been cut from Portal 1 due to time and technical limitations, like the hard light bridges and the excursion tunnels.
Oh, nice.
These new elements expanded the possibilities of puzzle design, offering fresh ways to challenge the players without relying solely on surface placement. They also added an entirely new character, Wheatley.
Yes.
originally conceived as just another talking sphere, Wheatley became a nervous, bumbling AI core who guided the player through early levels of the game. His dialogue was funny and spontaneous, delivered brilliantly by actor and comedian Stephen Merchant. The character helped lighten the tone and his role evolved dramatically over the course of development. At one point, and this didn't end up in the... I didn't write this in here, but this did not end up in the main game, but it's really funny that this is what their original idea was. At one point, players could actually pick up and drop Wheatley, but that led to unexpected issues. Some players would just leave him behind, breaking key story moments. The solution? Valve built invisible gates into the levels, forcing players to keep Wheatley close. In fact, the maximum distance a player could move ahead of Wheatley was around 20 feet. Any farther and the game would gently block your path. There's even a staircase in the game that exists for one simple reason. The developers wanted you to be able to throw Wheatley down it just because it was funny. Yeah.
Nice.
So, and what's funny about this, I didn't put any of this in here, but originally their plan was they were going to kill Wheatley. Okay, so I guess I should read this next part. Originally, Wheatley was going to die in the early game, crushed by GLaDOS after she reawakened, but the players loved him and the developers saw the potential in letting him grow into a full character arc. So they kept him in and eventually turned him into the game's main antagonist. So originally, they were going to kill Wheatley, and then you were going to meet all these other spheres, and they would all have personalities. And one of them was actually really kind of funny. He had he was a wise old sphere, and they even had like in this video I watched, it said Morgan Freeman's voice as his voice.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And they were like, he lives in this 20-by-20-foot room, and that's all he's ever seen for his entire life. And he's been there for 40, 50 years, and he's super wise, but he's only wise about this 20-by-20-foot room. So once he leaves, he starts freaking out.
That's hilarious.
He doesn't know anything yet.
That's actually
but he still
great.
Slowly gains more. But and if you notice at the end of the game, they actually bring all the spheres, or at least some of the spheres, in that they wanted to use as kind of guidelines for the rest of the game if Wheatley had died. They decided not to do this because it was getting confusing. Like, they had the right personalities for every sphere that was different, and they would have to hire six more voice actors, and then they would have to somehow, like, give you attachment to the spheres, even though you would only be with each sphere for a short time.
That's so fair.
Like, yeah, eventually they were like, you know what, it's just not worth all the headache to try to get all these, like, things together, and instead just keep Wheatley alive, because he was a funny character.
I mean, in a game that's as short as this is, I think limiting the amount of characters is a good thing for sure.
Yeah. And and you did get to see the spheres at the end a little bit. Yeah. The malfunctioning ones you attach to Wheatley to make him, like, more crazy or something.
Exactly. So,
one of the biggest challenges for Portal 2 was balancing accessibility with player and expectations. The first game functioned as a long tutorial. About 80% of it was designed to slowly teach the player how portals worked so they could handle the final tests. But Portal 2 had to welcome new players without boring returning fans. That meant compressing the learning curve, teaching more in less time, and introducing new mechanics without starting from scratch. They also redesigned elements from the first game. For example, the plasma balls, which I think when we played it, we fucking were so annoyed by how long it took for the plasma balls to go through the portal, and then we fuck up, and then they have to go back through the fucking portal, which had been used in Portal 1, were replaced with lasers. The old energy balls were unpredictable and had a frustrating delay after failure. Lasers, on the other hand, were immediate, visible, and reliable, better for both gameplay and visual feedback.
You just have to jump over them.
Yeah. The team also faced a unique narrative problem. Portal was a single-player game with a dark sense of humor, but humor is tricky in games, especially when the player is alone.
True.
So for Portal 2, Valve leaned into co-op. They designed a separate multiplayer campaign starring two testing robots, Atlas and Peabody. It was funny, lighthearted, and designed to be played with a friend. And I'll read this next part, but I'll give you a little bit more information about the video I watched when he was talking about the faces of the people playing the game. To make sure players didn't miss story beats, especially while talking to each other, Valve added multiple delivery methods for each key line. You might hear a piece of dialogue once, and again a little later, just in case. And that was just for the multiplayer.
Fair.
The result? Laughter. Playtesters who barely reacted to jokes in the single-player mode were laughing constantly when playing co-op, even when they were in different rooms not speaking to each other. Just knowing someone else was playing with them made the experience more enjoyable. So, and this is really funny. They actually had the pictures of playtesters.
Yeah.
And who let them take their pictures. And it showed, like, during the funniest moment of the game, just their faces. Like, you know, they were like this.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were during the funniest moments of the game while they're playing single player, they were not reacting. And what they found was, like, when you're even the funniest things, even though it's funny, and they did say, like, after they talked to them, like, was it bad? And they're like, no, it was actually really fucking funny. Because playtesters have to be honest. They don't lie to you for that stuff.
They found that, like, oh, go ahead.
They found that single-player playthroughs that you actually have less emotion for because you're not sharing that experience with someone else. So then they showed two pictures of two people who didn't have mics, who were not talking. They were in two separate rooms playing together, but they knew they were playing together, and then they would be laughing at something the other person did or at a dialogue in the game. Like, it's just interesting how we're such social creatures in that regard that even having one person there that we can't even talk to makes the experience better.
It's so true, though, because, like, even, like, watching comedy shows, like, if you watch a comedy show or a comedy movie by yourself, like, I find enjoyment in it still. Like, I still can laugh at everything, but, like, I don't feel like I laugh as hard as I do, because also sometimes other people's laughter makes you laugh even more.
For
sure. Like, it just has this cascading effect when you're with somebody else that propels everything you're doing to higher levels, whether that's good or bad. But I think, there is something to say about that.
Yeah, and it was interesting because they figured all this out. That's why they leaned so hard into co-op too, because they're like, you know, we had a really good interaction with co-op, and we should make this our main thing about the game.
Yes,
and they kind of made a mistake with co-op too. They retroactively put co-op in.
Oh, okay.
So after they wrote the single player, they put the co-op in. They said, okay, well, we'll just make the co-op happen after the single player, right? And then they found that people weren't even playing the single player. They were playing the co-op, but so the story didn't make a lot of sense. But they're like, you know what?
That's
we're
fair.
Sure that they don't care. So they didn't change anything.
That's fair.
Yeah. But if there's one thing Valve struggled with more than anything else, it was the ending. They knew they wanted a confrontation with Wheatley. They knew they wanted GLaDOS to return. They knew the final puzzle couldn't be too difficult because intense narrative moments shouldn't be disrupted by a 20-minute mental challenge. Yes. But the team couldn't figure out how to tie everything together. At one point, and this is the funniest thing ever. At one point, the ending involved the players talking, saying the word yes to trigger an event. So essentially, it would have you push the button, the stalemate button.
Yeah.
So you'd go to push it. Wheatley would destroy the button. And then the command prompt would say, the button has been destroyed. Therefore, if the person wishes to resolve this conflict, they must say yes. And then the player would, or the character, Chell, who has not spoken in two fucking games, would randomly...
Yes.
No, but here's the thing. The test they did was yes.
Yeah,
that was the problem. I think the voice acting was as bad.
You gotta fully emote that.
So and that's what I thought too after hearing it, because they did show the video of them the original ending, and it was just bad. And they said the playtesters were all confused. They didn't understand. They thought it was kind of dumb. They just thought it was anticlimactic. Like, they didn't really care if Chell spoke or didn't speak, because like, they were already resolved the fact that Chell would be mute, because they even make jokes about that throughout the entire game of how mute the character is.
For sure.
So, but yeah, they realized quickly that that was not the way to go, was to have fucking Chell say
yes. So they went to the moon!
Well, kind of. Hold on. saying the word yes to trigger an event, because Chell had been mute for two entire games. This was jarring and confusing. They also explored multiple fake endings, and these actually sounded kind of fun. One of them let you put a portal to the moon early in the game and float off into space, dying of asphyxiation as a sad song played. Creative, yes, but ultimately unworkable. So they put awesome. 20 or 30 fake endings into the game.
That's fun.
And then at the end, they're like, this is a lot. We're going to take all these out. So,
okay.
And they were just like, all like, and it, there is one of them actually. Remember, as you're walking through the portals, there's a point where GLaDOS goes, okay, here's the exit. I was going to give it to you anyway. If you walk in here, you can leave. And then you have the option to walk into that exit. Yeah. And if you do, you die.
Yep. I'm actually going to bring that on up later, actually.
Yeah. So then I ended up doing that because I thought it would be funny. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. And then you just die. But those were the endings that they had originally put in the game, like as a way to end the game. So right there in their original idea, the game would have ended. You would have beaten the game essentially.
That's hilarious.
And then they figured out, okay, well, this isn't workable because it's just too much to programming. And also it's just hard.
And this isn't the Stanley Parable. That's what the Stanley Parable's for. Yeah, and I think
the Stanley Parable actually had some developers from Valve in there.
I think so. It probably would
make
a lot
of
sense.
Or it was developed by Valve. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And then someone had an idea. What if you used the moon? What if you shot a portal at the moon? It made sense in the logic of the game. It was bold, visually striking, cinematic, the kind of ending that felt earned. So they built it, and it worked. Portal 2 launched on April 18, 2011 to critical acclaim. Players and critics alike praised its writing, its puzzles, its characters, and its unexpected emotional weight. But despite its success, it didn't dominate the awards that year. Do you know what game dominated the awards in 2011?
2011. No.
Oh my God. That honor went to Skyrim.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You could not compete with Skyrim. Oh, my God. I saw that. I'm like, one of the worst times to release a game.
Yeah. I mean, God, that's so hard.
Yeah. Another behemoth of a game released in the same
Seriously.
Year. The team at Valve didn't actually mind. They love Skyrim, too.
I mean, fair. I mean, a six-hour-long game really can't compete with a...
With fucking
100-hour
and not just that, Skyrim was visually striking. It was very cohesive. Like, the entirety of the game was perfect. There was nothing wrong with Skyrim.
Still going on to this day. It's gonna
people are still modding
more than any other games have been ever re-released. It's ridiculous.
Because for them, Portal 2 wasn't about accolades. It was about creative risk, about throwing out the rule book, about tossing months of work and starting again. Not because they had to, but because they knew they could make something better. It started with a team of 7 students. It grew into a team of 50 developers. And in the end, it became one of the most beloved puzzle games of all time. Not because it had to exist, but because someone Valve looked at the success of Portal and said, what if we went back in and just made it weirder?
Yes, which, thank you. Thank you, Pedro.
Yes, thank you, Valve. Yes. That was perfect. All right, that was the story. We're going to jump into our next little segment here.
The best and the worst. All right. Best for me, obviously, one of the best things is the voice acting. J.K. Simmons, Steve Merchant, and Ellen McLean. Which I, one of the things I saw, because I was like, I wonder what other voice GLaDOS has done. She actually did the voice of the AI Gypsy Danger in Pacific Rim as well. So GLaDOS is Gypsy Danger. Hell yeah. that was a cool thing to figure out.
I'm pretty sure she did all the turrets too, didn't she?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did.
But yeah, but the humor
they had
in this
some great fucking one-liners in this too. That the like, okay, don't freak out. But you might have a very minor case of very serious brain damage.
The best line. And I didn't know this rant came from this game until I heard it in the game.
The lemons?
The lemons. When life gives you lemons, don't make lemonade. Make life take the lemons back. Get mad. I don't want your damn lemons. Well, what the hell am I supposed to do with these?
You're so bad at voice. Get mad. I don't want your damn lemons. What the hell am I supposed to do with these? Demand to see life's manager.
Make life rue the day that it could give.
Rue the day it tried to give Cabe Johnson lemons. I memorized that entire line. I've heard it so many times.
Do you know who I am?
I'm the man who's going to burn your house down.
With lemons.
Just, it's so good. And just even like you're falling down and GLaDOS just goes like, hey, how was your day? I'll tell you how mine was. I'm a potato.
I almost got eaten by a bird.
Yeah, it's such a funny fucking... They did so good with the jokes.
It seems like you put on a few pounds. None of the tests I made were designed to have this extra weight. You should look into that.
Yeah.
Just like, shut
like
the fuck up.
Taunting that happens constantly at your character's expense.
It's so bad. It's
just,
so funny,
it
though.
Is. And Wheatley is just such a perfect character, too. What a great addition to the game. Cave Johnson, fucking J.K. Simmons is just so funny as it is.
And honestly, so like, good. All three of them together was so perfect. And the entire time, just, like, everyone's making you laugh. Every one of these characters is making you laugh. Like, through the entire
You almost wanted to meet Cave humor. Johnson. Like, it was just
so
heartbreaking that you didn't get to. And then finding out that GLaDOS was his assistant.
Carolyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I
thought
almost
was really
thought,
cool too,
because that was the thing that Cave Johnson would be Wheatley somehow. But which apparently that was actually like a fan conspiracy for the longest time. It has been debunked. Obviously, he's not. But
I think they wanted to save it because if they ever decided to do a third portal, which I don't think they will, because I think they had a fairly good like resolution to Portal. You know,
there's a fan made game that everyone considers to be the spiritual third game that everyone actually loves.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is it?
I can't remember what it's called. I'll have to look that. I'll tag
bring
it
up
in
just
the
to
video.
Like kill my I want to know what it is now.
Come on, we're
talking. Yeah. Puzzles in this game, I didn't have to look any of them up to understand how to beat them. They were very not simple, but they weren't
three.
Like three?
I had three that I looked at.
Oh, I thought they were all very like intuitive. There were some I struggled with, but eventually got to as soon as I just like tried some new things. This game really did explore a lot. One of the things I saw in the story was it was amazing. It's so hard to make puzzles because one of the things players do not do in these games is look up.
Yeah.
So they actually, there's a scene where you're like getting the nerve gas and you're just watching this playtester play it, and you're watching like a speed of him doing it, and it's really it's like 20 minutes of him just shooting at the window that's in front of him. And the solution was, if you just look up, there's a vent you can shoot your portal gun through and you're good. But
so
like,
many times
they're like,
look up or look straight down,
and that was a big problem. They're like it's just amazing how many players just do not look up. For and at one point they joked about putting a sign in the game that says please look up, but they couldn't. And I should have put this in the story, but I didn't. But they didn't want to do that because it wasn't, you know, they didn't want to give too many hints. They didn't want to like make the puzzles.
That's fair.
They didn't want to ruin the puzzles by giving notes. The only sign they ended up putting in the game during this part is they were really proud of the coding they did for the implosion of the nerve agent, the nerve gas.
Okay. Yeah.
And they put in a sign that said, warning, during nerve gas implosion, look directly at nerve gas implosion. they were so happy with the result, and they were worried players would just turn around and leave.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I will say also best, we the puzzles and mechanics of this game are phenomenal. And obviously the shooting the moon moment is just amazing. And one of the things that I absolutely love about the shooting the moon moment is if you're paying attention throughout the game, Cave Johnston actually talks about how moon dust is what causes the things to be portalable.
Yeah, because they make the gel. You find out that the white gel is actually ground down moon, and that's Cave Johnston drank some of it.
It's all ridiculous.
Irreparable cancer or something. They do a great job, and I think they do tease that in the first one. I think they did say that the walls were moon, if I remember right. I have to replay the first one, but it was just like super cool. The they put some cool new mechanics in here with the light bridges. They put like a repulsion goo and a
the speed goo, the acceleration goo,
acceleration goo. Like all the goo was really cool. Just like learning how to use the goo to beat puzzles and everything was really cool.
Using the portals as like cannons to like shoot them in varieties of different ways was very
There were so many moments in this game where I did want to just look up how to do a puzzle and I'm like, nope, I can figure this out. And it always involved goo. It's always the goo.
When I first tried playing this was a long time ago, but I struggled so hard and I think I only made it about halfway through the game. Yeah. And so this time I only looked up three different puzzles, which as soon as I looked them up, it was one of those moments where you're like,
I could have figured this out if
Why didn't I think of that? Like of all the things that I didn't think of, that was the stupidest one.
I do remember only one puzzle in Portal 1 I had to look up, and
Portal 1's not that hard.
No, it's not, but there was one puzzle that was just fucking like really difficult to grasp, and it was all about like jumping and getting the right amount of acceleration.
And you had to shoot while in air multiple times, I think, and land through portals to keep accelerating yourself. It was one was hard. I do remember that.
Honestly, there wasn't a lot in this game that I can say was worst. I don't really have a lot of gripes. I don't think I have any,
actually. I have gripes, honestly.
I thought it was a very well put together game. There was nothing wrong with it. Storytelling was very fluid. I guess if I had one gripe, it's the amount of puzzles you had to do before the story continued.
That's fair.
So like in the first part, when you reactivate Gladys, like it's kind of exciting going through the ruins. You get to see the destroyed areas that you did in the first game. But then after you activate Gladys, you're like going through all these tests and you meet Wheatley once, and then seven levels later, you meet him again. And it's just,
he's one of those. He's always spying on you. You can kind of see him.
Yeah, you can kind of see him, but he doesn't interact with you all the time.
That's true.
And I'm like, okay, well, maybe you could have put in three levels and then Wheatley comes in and gives you his plan.
But Wheatley was creating all those things while he was there. Like it was all happening.
But the same thing happened while you were doing the Wheatley test. You're just like, okay, well, now I'm stuck. I was actually enjoying like exploring the outside of Aperture, but now I'm stuck doing tests again, which I get. And it was kind of funny, but it's just a lot. It was a lot of tests. So that's the only thing. Maybe just make it more narrative gameplay during those parts. Although they did, adding the extra Wheatley commentary during those tests really did make it more fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think just adding more GLaDOS commentary would have made the first part fun.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. So we get into the first few hours of the game then?
Let's do it.
All right. I think for me, this game caught my attention right away and really, like, this just is great, honestly, from the start. Like, I haven't had a moment in this game where I'm just like, I don't feel or I'm bored or anything. Like, it's got great pacing. I was enjoying it all the way through. I think this game will, you're either going to love or hate it instantly. You're not going to change your mind throughout.
Yeah. And it, like, it had some of the best parts in the beginning where there's a part where you literally have to catch Wheatley and he's like, you're going to catch me, right? You're going to catch me. Uh-oh. But please catch me. All right, on three. One, two. Okay, well, it's higher than I thought it was and I don't really want to jump anymore.
Three.
It's just like the amount of humor in the first 2 hours of this game is just incredible. Like that moments made this game perfect.
One of the things I was happy about, but also bummed out. There's a moment where Wheatley's like, hey, I have to break this code real quick. So can you turn around? Because I don't want anyone watching me while I do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do it if anyone's watching. And if you keep staring at him, he'll keep repeating like a loop of like five lines over and over again.
Yeah.
But you literally have to turn away. And I both love and hate it because he says that you can't do it if you are, but you literally have to. I sat
you know what's funny is I turned away and then turned back to him super quick.
Yeah.
And I was able to see him just open the door.
Yeah, and I mean, that's totally fine, and that totally works, but if you don't actually turn away, it doesn't actually trigger anything. Like, you literally have to. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, but it made a little bit extra humor for it.
Yeah, it's definitely extra humor, but I actually had to look it up because I was like, is there a certain time that he actually will, like, fine, you're gonna watch me do it. Like, some games will have that, will, like, after like 5 or 10 minutes of waiting, like, something extra happens. So I thought maybe this would be the moment for that, and it just didn't. Mm-mm. So that was my bad for thinking it might have that, but
yeah. I mean, it would have been funny if it did.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah, I would say this is 100% a pass for the first two, honestly.
Oh, yeah. There's
nothing wrong with this game.
For sure. So next up, we have Steve Achieves. So this game is about 6 hours long. I don't know how long it is to 100% complete. It kind of depends on who you're playing.
There's a lot of hidden messages and shit.
There's what?
There's a lot of hidden messages in the game, too. So it's like...
There's a lot of hidden messages.
Random hidden areas everywhere.
Yeah, and depending on who you're playing with co-op wise, it's going to be depending on how long a lot of because most of the achievements actually are in co-op. I would say more than 50% are in co-op. First achievement I wanted to bring up is one called No Hard Feelings. There's a turret that early on asks for your help and is stuck in a pipe, and you will run into that same turret again later when it's on the conveyor belt, about ready to be destroyed and recycled. You can save it, and it'll actually thank you for taking it off the thing, and you'll get the No Hard Feelings achievement. And then actually, it will even, if you hadn't figured it out already, tell you that Gladys is Carolyn or Carol or whatever her name was.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really interesting that, like, one of the turrets actually, like, gives you some of the, like, story information if you save it off the conveyor belt. Like, I was like, that's crazy. One you talked about earlier, the Good Listener achievement for listening to GLaDOS as she tells you how to escape. And if you do take that, you die, and then you only get 5G for it. there is the Portrait of a Lady achievement. This is for finding a hidden portrait of Cave and Carol. And when you do find that, Gladys has a line saying, "Ah, both of those people look really familiar. I wonder why they look familiar to me." And that's kind of when you start piecing together that she is. There's the Can't Touch This achievement. This is one of the co-op achievements I was talking about for dancing in front of a turret blocked by a hard light bridge. So put up one of those hard light bridges so they can't hit you, and then just keep dancing in front of it, and you'll get the Can't Touch This achievement. Pretty fantastic, actually.
I like it.
There's
good.
The Empty Gesture achievement. If you drop your co-op partner in goo while they're gesturing by removing that bridge from underneath them.
Nice.
So there's a lot of, like, messing with your partner or dancing or taunting in the co-op achievement, which is hilarious to me, which is also why I think co-op's the better way to probably play this. Asking for trouble, you taunt GLaDOS in front of the camera in each of the 5 co-op courses. So every time you see a camera, just go taunt GLaDOS in front of it, and you'll get this achievement.
Nice.
And then lastly, the one I'll talk about is Friends List with Benefits. While playing co-op, hug 3 different people on your friends list. So it requires you to have more than 2 friends people. I'm sorry, it does.
Hug 3 friends? Is there, like, a way to send a hug or something?
I guess there's a way to hug with your characters maybe or something in the game. Like, there's all these, like, gestures and stuff. I haven't played the co-op since the game came out, so I don't remember a lot of the
I've
co-op.
I've never played it. I watched my buddy do it for a little while, but that was about it.
Yeah, I heard the co-op's amazing, actually, from everyone I've heard play it. So we'll have to play it sometime.
All right, next
we have the Hunt for All the Eggs.
Ooh,
talking about the Easter eggs we find in this game. There is a lot of random Easter eggs and hidden rooms throughout the entirety of the game. I will not talk about every one of them.
I want to hear every single fucking one.
So you can find these hidden rooms, and all these hidden rooms have drawings and writings on the wall discussing random crazy things. And the first one we had, the cake is a lie message. So chapter 2, chamber 8, GLaDOS says something super fast and says that for the instructions, you'll have to listen to what she said in slow motion. And if you do slow it down, it is a quote from Moby Dick. Interestingly enough.
Interesting.
I don't know why. In chapter 3, chamber 16, there's a hidden room early on that has 4 turrets dancing and playing a song. It's actually really adorable, and the, like, turrets are, like, pushing out their arms and, like, just doing this, like, really, like, cute, adorable song. It's kind of fun. But yeah, you have to get there by using a laser to destroy a turret that is behind a vent grate. In Chapter 6, Chamber 15, you can spot one of the co-op androids leaving through the door, and Whitley will even talk about it. Throughout the game, also, you can spot Whitley spying on you multiple times as well. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool that you could actually see one of the co-op droids, and Whitley actually mentions, like, oh, I found these two droids, and I'm having fun with them by making them do other tests, alluding to the co-op mode.
Yeah, that's why the single player is before the multiplayer.
Exactly.
Chronologically.
In the area where all the kids' science projects are, when you're walking through the offices and stuff, there's a bunch of science projects with potatoes. The largest potato has a drawing behind it that is signed by the player character Chell, which means that she is a child of one of the employees of the Aperture Science, most likely.
Mm-hmm. They tease that in the game, too.
Yeah. There's also a life preserver in a secret room that says Borealis, a nod to a company shown in Half-Life 2 in a ship that was in Half-Life 2. Also, Cave mentions Black Mesa ruining things for them at one point as well. So nods to Half-Life. We also, in the game, I found a video of someone finding some screens, and actually has the same message in Portal 1 that contains random words that are ingredients for a cake recipe.
It was funny during the video I watched. Sorry, I didn't put this in the story.
Oh, you'll go for it.
But they said some things remain the same between Portal 1 and Portal 2 in the first couple months. We still didn't have any cake.
Nice.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Also, I saw there was a very, very secret room that was really hard to get to. I watched a weird video about how to get to it, but apparently in this room you can put a companion box on a button and a screen will come out and a Half-Life 3 teaser will appear. It'll be talking about
the character
from
Half-Life
3? No,
I don't think they did.
It never came out. But it says there was a release date of 20XX, so they never even put like a release date or anything on it. Like,
it was probably smart,
a very teaser. But I had also heard that possibly had been removed later in the game, so that might be only like early renditions of the game.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's just some of the Easter eggs I found in the game.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah,
that'd be cool if they did come out with Half-Life 3 or like Portal 3 or something. But I think they're honestly, Valve might be done making games.
Well, I mean, they did Half-Life Alyx, which is kind of a third one. Yeah. It was a VR game.
But that was like 2016, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, yeah, somewhere around like, it's still like
later. Have they released any games in 9 years?
No, but I keep hearing rumors about a possibility of a Half-Life 3. And there was that Black Mesa game that came out that was a remake of Half-Life.
Yeah, but like, not really a new game, but I guess a little bit of extra shit. But I don't feel like they're gonna. I think they're done making games. They make so much money from fucking Steam.
Fair. All right. So let's go on to what it's worth. What are you rating this game?
So this is weird. So here's the problem with our rating system. And I was thinking about this. I'm like, is this on the same level of every 5-star game we've played?
No. Yeah,
the answer is no. So that's why I'm going to give it a 5. And I say this with an asterisk. For what it is, I think this game is fucking perfect.
That's fair.
And not that it competes with any of my other level 5 games. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
I wouldn't say this is as good as Clair Obscur by any means.
No.
If you had to choose between the two, you're probably going to choose Clair Obscur. But for each game, each kind of game we play, we're giving it a rating based on the feelings we had playing it, how fun we found it. Is this a game we'd replay? You know, all of these factors in this game playing mechanic we have. And honestly, I think this game, for what it is, it's really good. I don't think it's comparable to the other 5-star game we've done, but I think it's just as good in regards for the emotions that it left behind. So
yeah,
and we could say it's like a 5-star puzzle game if we really wanted to get down to it, like in that regard. But
no,
I mean, think this does deserve a 5.
I think even the 5 rating has to have some sort of a window for it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it can be a near perfect game that was so much shorter and so much more confined and so much less of an experience that I think everyone should absolutely play. And I'm going to replay. but not be on the same level as Clair Obscur. Like,
yeah,
that is a perfect game that everyone should play through and through. And I still think everyone should do the same with Portal too. But yeah. It is weird.
It's hard to compare like our favorite games because our favorite games for very different reasons. I just think that anyone who would play this game also would get enjoyment out of playing this game.
But also, like you said, like per genre, and you kind of have to do that. And even people do that with movies. Like,
yeah,
people all the time, like, what's your favorite movie? I was like, okay, but like, what genre? Because like, yeah. I can't say like, a Hereditary and A Knight's Tale in the same sentence. Like, that's not a comparable comparison there.
Because Knight's Tale sucks.
Fuck you. Knight's Tale's amazing.
I know. A lot of people like that fucking movie. I can't stand it.
I love it. I love everybody. It's one of my all-time favorites.
It's Alan Tudyk and Heath Ledger, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Portal 2 is one of the best puzzle games of all time. I don't think that goes without question. I think it's one of the easiest to get into. It's one that doesn't take too long. It doesn't hold your hand. It doesn't make you use guides. Because there's a bunch of puzzle games like the game Witness that everyone loves. And it's a very beautiful game. It's a fun game, but it gets way too hard after about 10 hours. And I have to look up every other puzzle at that point. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. But games like Portal 2 are just perfect. It's short. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's funny. It's got a lot of heart and charm. It's going to be one I replay over and over and over again.
I agree. I think Portal 2 just has a special place in our heart, and that's why I think it deserves a 5 rating.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No. And the team who made it, of course, Valve, is fucking phenomenal. So
they very much are, and Scott loves to suck their dick. So yeah,
I do. They're great. They're awesome.
They always tip afterwards.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that was Portal 2, guys. Join us next week for what are we doing, a hot takes?
Yeah, we are doing a hot takes.
Which one?
I can't remember the topics off the top
of my head.
Well,
join us next week for our hot takes, then.
Yes, come and figure out what we're going to do.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one. And seriously, if you want to ask any questions, want to reach out to us, soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. We will answer whatever you want as long as it's reasonable.
Yes, and not too ridiculous, but it's okay if it's a little personal.
Yeah.
A little. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.